I call this meeting of Sylvania City Council for July 18th, 2016 to order. Will the clerk please call the roll?
Mrs. Capalini?
Here.
Mr. Frye?
Here.
Mr. Hanem?
Here.
Mrs. Hussman?
Here.
Mr. Lukey?
Here.
Mr. Mishka?
Here.
Mrs. Westfall?
Here.
All seven members of council are present, therefore a quorum does exist. I welcome all of you to our council agenda tonight in our meeting room. We do have several issues on the agenda tonight, and we welcome you to stay and listen to all of them. At this time, I invite you to join us in our Pledge of Allegiance, this meeting led by Mrs. Hussman.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Agenda item three is additions to the agenda, and I do have a couple for this evening. Agenda item 16, I would like to add Barbara Conover, reappointment to the Lucas County Board of Health. You have a letter that was placed at your place, at your spot this evening. That's what we're talking about. And we'll hopefully reappoint her when we get there. Agenda item 17, a report from the service director about the ODOT salt bids received during the summer replenishment bid taken recently. Mrs. Westfall?
Nothing, thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Other members of city council?
Mr. Mayor, I would like to add a discussion of Ohio checkbook and a possible referral to finance committee.
Make that number 18, of course. Other items from members of city council?
Mr. Mayor, I'd like the water schedule at utilities meeting.
Let's make that 15A. Anything further? Mr. Sanford?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Schreier?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Chief Rodas?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Mr. Aller?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Mrs. Briney?
Nothing, Mr. Mayor.
Is there a motion to approve the agenda as amended?
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Agenda item four is approval of the meeting minutes from our last meeting on June 20th. Mrs. Westfall?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Unless there are any corrections, I move that the Journal of Minutes of the June 20th, 2016 meeting of Sylvania City Council be approved as submitted.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. The meeting minutes from June 20th, 2016 be approved as submitted. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries and those meeting minutes are approved. Agenda item five, we'll start with a report of the Zoning and Annexation Committee meeting held in these council chambers on July 5th, 2016 regarding zoning application 1-2016. Mr. Hanem?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The Zoning and Annexation Committee met on July 5th at 6:30 with all members of council present to discuss the work that was being done by both the administration and others on council with regard to the proposed zoning amendment on the parcel along McCord Road, referred to now as the Woodland Hills Development. We also heard extensively from the builder, the proposed developer, on his proposed modifications to the plan commission approved form. We then had comments from the public in both in support and in opposition to the zoning change and in support of modifications to the proposed zoning change. Since that meeting, I think everyone on council has been in a variety of meetings with members of the community, with the developer. We've had lots of communications back and forth with Kevin Oller, the administration. And what we have proposed or for consideration tonight is a piece of legislation that amends the Planning Commission approved plans in a number of significant ways. And those are specified in the legislation, but I think it's appropriate to just briefly review the changes from the plans that were approved by the Planning Commission. I'll point out that we, I think council all received a revised set of drawings for the development, which shows a relocation of the multifamily units and the single family units, reflects a number of other changes, which I'll detail. And also attached to the, also included was a preliminary landscape plan. There's a detailed landscape plan, which is part of the development plan, which will be developed, and I'll mention that as we go through this as well. And also, I believe tonight at your places, there were renderings of the multifamily, the two-family villas, and three different single-family villa renderings. These will be attached. Those are referred to in the legislation and would be attached to it. And they are incorporated as part of the proposed amendment to the Planning Commission approval. Just to remind you all, we need the Planning Commission recommendation. We are required to act on that in a reasonable time. That requires an affirmative vote. We need four votes to pass what the Planning Commission has previously adopted. We need five votes to approve the plan that is before us tonight in the legislation that's before us tonight, as it is as it represents an amendment to the Planning Commission approval, which has a presumption of validity of super validity under our charter and code. So among the changes that from the Planning Commission approval that we are going to be voting on this evening is an increase in the rear yard setback for those units installed on the western property line from 25 feet to 30 feet. We are including in the legislation a 10-foot screening buffer within the rear yard setback along the western property line, and other appropriate screening is to be installed on the northern and southern property lines, and that buffer will be detailed and incorporated into a landscaping plan. Like I said, we do have a preliminary landscaping plan attached, which we received from the developer. As a result of the changes, there will be no two-family residential units installed along the perimeter of the site. Those will all be constructed in the center of the site with single-family units along the perimeter. There are two 15-foot landscape screening buffers installed at the north and south end of Maddie Lane from the western property line east to the lots as shown on the site plan, so two additional screening buffers. The density of the site has been lowered to 24 single-family residential units and 22 family units, and those are reflected on the site plan. Sidewalks are going to be installed on both sides of Sylvan Hills Drive and Woodland Hills Drive, and on the west side of Matty Drive, and again, those are depicted on the site plan. The developer of the property has agreed to maintain as many mature trees around the perimeter site as possible, and has agreed to survey the site with our superintendent of Parks and Forestry to determine which trees are to remain, and he will designate those in the final landscaping plan. Next, as part of the development plan, he will include provisions to be incorporated into a homeowners association for the single-family residential units that will prohibit the rental of those single-family units. As part of the development plan, the developers agreed to include provisions that, which would be incorporated into a homeowners association agreement for the two-family residential units to be developed as an over 55 community under the Housing for Older Persons Act of 1995. Just note that compliance with that, or bringing that within that act, I think enhances the legal defensibility of the age cutoff. The exterior appearance of the residential units will be included in the development plan and shall be substantially comparable to the renderings that you have in front of you today. And finally, if construction isn't begun within 4 years, the zoning certificate will expire and reapplication for the PD shall be necessary, and this is simply to make sure that the project gets built. The way I anticipate proceeding tonight is we'll introduce the proposed legislation, and we will vote on it as council this evening. If we don't pass it, we don't have legislation approving the planning commission. We don't have legislation addressing the planning commission recommendation, so we would postpone that until we would have a separate vote on that at our next council meeting. But we would address that only if we do not pass this. And I think that concludes that is the result of the work of the committee meeting held on the 5th and the substantial work of council and administration since that time. So I think that concludes my report on the zoning meeting.
All right. Any discussion among council members concerning Mr. Hanum's report or anything else you'd like to share with your fellow council members at this time? If not, and you still have time, if not, we're going to proceed with the two votes we would normally take. The first is to waive the second and third readings. The second vote will be to vote the ordinance up or down. It will require 5 votes to pass tonight because this is to override the plan commission recommendation. And indeed, if it does not pass, then we are not prepared to proceed tonight. We'll have to come back with other legislation.
Mr. Mayor, I do want to, one of the issues, and I know you've listed it on the agenda here, and I'm not sure where we want to address this in the process, but there, you know, throughout this process, we've received a lot of comments about pedestrian safety to and from McCord and Sylvan across McCord Road. And the council has invested significant time and effort, along with the administration, in working with the Safe Routes to School program over the years to address the issues of providing a safe opportunity for kids to cross at McCord Road so they could walk to Sylvan and McCord. And through this process, we have had significant analysis of traffic and traffic patterns, and I think the administration and the council and the developers submitted information that We do not believe that the development of this PD will have a significant impact on traffic on McCord or the safety of students who walk to Sylvan and McCord. But I think regardless of this development or anything else, I believe, and I'll let you speak to this, Mr. Mayor, but I know my impression is that our administration's prepared to work with our schools to address concerns regarding the school-related pedestrian traffic in the McCord corridor and see that some of the concerns that we heard from the school during our public hearing are addressed, and that we do those things that are necessary and appropriate to make sure that our school crossing is safe.
With your permission, we can have that discussion before the vote, if that's what City Council would like to hear.
I think I would like to hear that.
All right. The administration has been in contact with the Sylvania City Schools. In fact, we were contacted by the crossing guard coordinator for the Sylvania Schools. Chief has been in contact with them, and the chief is prepared to give us a little report as to where we are proceeding from here.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. As the mayor indicated, we were contacted by a representative from the Sylvania Schools in reference to assisting them obtain information on training their school crossing guards. If anybody's been around for a long time around here, years ago we used to have a McCord Junior High SRO over there, and in the years since then we don't have them there anymore.
That's a school resource officer.
But we used to go ahead and we used to train the school crossing guards with you know, some training that we could provide to them. We have plans on file. We will pull them out. We will assist the schools in whatever they need to train their school crossing guard in the court and at the other crossing areas within the city. We'll assist anybody who comes to us and they want our information and our assistance. We'll be more than happy to help them out. In addition, I will tell you this, at the beginning of the school year, we will have a heavy presence down there on McCord Road. So if you're traveling down on McCord, I'm giving you a heads up right now. Don't speed, don't violate school crossing guards or anything down there. So you have to be very, very careful. So we will have a heavy presence down there at the beginning of the school year, in the morning time, in the afternoon when school is letting out. And then periodically throughout the whole school year, we'll be down there as well throughout the whole city. So.
Any questions for the chief? Mr. Lupke.
No question for the chief, but I guess a question for Mrs. Westphal, who chairs the safety committee. Are we comfortable with where the administration has gotten us on this matter, or do we think that it might call for additional discussion in a safety committee meeting?
I think that they have addressed the issue, and I believe that we'll get a report out from the chief in a timely fashion, and if we feel that there's a need for a safety committee based on something that he's observed, I think we certainly can call that to order. But at this point in time, I think administration has accepted responsibility, and certainly if we have questions, we should feel free to ask them those.
Okay, thank you.
All right, hearing no further discussion, Mr. Hainan, we might want to proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I want to introduce ordinance number 37-2016. All members of council having previously received copies, I will read by title only. Modifying the recommendation of the Municipal Planning Commission to approve petition for zoning ordinance amendment number ZA-1-2016. On the petition of George V. Orvitz, agent for Dave Schmidt, to change the zoning of his property at 4411, 4351, 4325, and 4337 McCord Road, Sylvania, Ohio, waiving the second and third readings and declaring an emergency.
Second. It's been moved and seconded that ordinance number 37-2016 be read by title only and the second and third readings be waived. Mr. Lutke.
Question. Do you intend to have any public comment before we do our final vote?
It is normal to have comment from people in the audience. However, there has been a public hearing already held in two committee meetings. I would recommend that if council wants to hear comments, that only new information be covered. There's certainly been more than adequate opportunity an opportunity taken for other input to take place. And in order to move ahead to the rest of our two-page agenda, I will ask that only new information be done, if indeed you want to hear comments.
Mr. Mayor, yeah, I think with all due respect, there have been six or seven provisions added to the current legislation since our last committee meeting. I know that the community has had a chance to look at those online since Friday, but I'm not sure that they've had a chance, if they have specific questions about those items, to ask questions about them. So I guess I would encourage us to take public comment, but limit it to the specific items that now exist in the legislation that did not exist at the committee meeting time.
All right.
I think we ought to go ahead and vote on the...
I think we should finish the first motion.
And have the motion before council.
I agree with that. So once again, it's been moved and seconded that the first and second readings be waived and the ordinance be read by title only. Would the clerk please call the roll on that motion?
Mrs. Capalini?
Yes.
Mr. Frye?
Yes.
Mr. Hanum?
Yes.
Mrs. Hussman?
Yes.
Mr. Lukey?
Yes.
Mrs. Westfall?
Yes.
Mr. Mishka?
Yes.
Vote is 7-0, so it will be read by title only and will waive the second and third readings. Now, at the request of Mr. Lukey, are there any individual residents or the developer that have new information or questions to ask at this time? We appreciate you all being here. We also appreciate all the input that you've given to us prior. But there.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
We are there. Final passage.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Move final passage of ordinance number 37-2016.
Second.
Been moved and seconded for final passage of ordinance 37-2016, requiring 5 votes to overcome the Plan Commission recommendation. Would the clerk please call the roll?
Mrs. Capalini?
No.
Mr. Frye?
Yes.
Mr. Hanum?
Yes.
Mrs. Hussman?
Yes.
Mr. Lukey?
Yes.
Mrs. Westfall?
Yes.
Mr. Mishka?
No.
Vote is 5-2. The sufficient votes are done, and ordinance 37-2016 is approved by that motion. Thank you for all of council's hard work and also for the input of the residents. You are welcome to attend the rest of our meeting this evening, or you're welcome to go up and go right now. Your choice. We will hesitate here for a few minutes so you do not disrupt us. We are going to talk about the Sylvania Water Supply study next, if you're interested in that. Then let's proceed with our council agenda. We're up to agenda item 6. This is a report and presentation and then a discussion about the Sylvania Water Supply Study. This was released last Friday at a press conference in these council chambers. It was quite well attended and it was well covered by the press. I would like to first apologize that you did not receive your notice earlier. The press conference announcement was emailed out to a wide group of people on Wednesday. You were supposed to be at the top of the list, and it was not there. It was not found until the president of council actually questioned me on it, and we sent it out immediately. No intended slight was made or intended. It should not have been that way, but we were so intent on preparing for that press conference that I did not notice you were not on the email list, and I take full responsibility. However, you did receive it, the Dropbox on Thursday. You also got a hard copy of it in your packet. Excuse me, on Friday you got that. You also got a hard copy in your council, with your council packet on Friday. You've had a chance to review it. It has been also presented to TMACOG today. We had about a two-hour session down at TMACOG discussing this with the Regional Water Planning Committee. It was very well received and put into context with the other two water studies that are going on, those being the TEMACOG Toledo Lucas County Water Study and also the Wood County Study, for which we had preliminary results today. The committee at TEMACOG has established a subcommittee, which includes the three original members on the steering committee for the TEMACOG committee, and also adding Mr. Aller, Mr. Ed Moore from the city of Toledo, and the mayor of Bowling Green has requested another addition to that as well, Kevin. Let me look that up for you just so I can tell you it is, so who he's recommended. I haven't acted on that yet. Daryl Stockberger, BG Assistant Utilities Director. You've received an email to have that action committee meet on it next week. And it was really a pretty good meeting this morning or this afternoon. Even the president, we had more people in the room from Toledo than I've ever seen at a TEMACOG meeting. President or Mayor Paula Hicks Hudson is out of town. However, we did have their president of city council there. We had several members of the utility division there. There must have been seven or eight people there from Toledo. And the president of Toledo City Council endorsed what we were doing, said he would work to get approved by Toledo City Council whatever the committee recommends. I think he's still going to want to review it, make sure we recommend the same thing, but or what he's interested in. But a regional water system made big strides forward today. With that, Kevin, I'd like you to introduce our consultants that are here this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The two primary individuals that we dealt with throughout the course of the study are here this evening, and John Williman and Brian Phillips with FTCNH, Fishbeck, Thompson, Carr, and Huber, and that's why it's abbreviated to FTCNH, are here this evening to just give a quick presentation and some the summary information for the study and you know, the data and the information that we'll use from this point forward to make decisions. So, thanks, guys.
Thanks very much. Thanks for inviting us to present this study tonight. We thought the whole audience was here for us, but I guess not. So,
you're lucky that they weren't.
We do appreciate the opportunity. Kevin said, I'm John Williman, and this is Brian Phillips. I'm the project manager for the project. Brian was the lead author of the study and the lead engineer, looking over the scenarios and the alternatives and the cost estimates. We worked on the presentation, or on the study rather, with a company called Utility Financial Solutions. They're a rate consultant and an expert. They do rate work around the country. And they helped us take the cost information and then put that into a model to look at rate structures and impacts on monthly rates and to compare those on an average usage basis. So that's kind of the framework of the information that we provided. I'm going to turn it over to Brian. I'm going to do a little show and tell, and I'll flip boards. The information that we're showing here is in the report that you got in front of you. So and at any time, if you have a question, feel free, obviously, to please ask. So this is Brian.
Thank you. And like John said, appreciate the opportunity to present. I'm just going to go through real quick kind of the highlights of the study. If you have any questions in particular on topic, feel free to let me know those. But we were charged with developing three different scenarios and evaluating the feasibility of those. The scenarios that we looked at were a Sylvania alone option, where Sylvania would go off and build their own plant, and that plant would serve only the Sylvania service area. We were charged with looking at a independent regional partnership that would be separate from Toledo. There were a number of communities that were listed in the proposal for us to consider. And then we were also charged with looking at a supplemental to Toledo option, one which would be part of the greater Toledo system and serve the city as a whole and Sylvania at the same time. So the information that was gathered, Sylvania alone is straightforward. It's the Sylvania, City of Sylvania, and the Sylvania Township portion that's served by the city. The Independent Regional Partnership, we looked at the communities that were listed, but we reduced that list some just because they weren't practical or feasible to serve all the communities that were listed. We ended up narrowing down to just the Sylvania service area and then the South County water system in Monroe County, Michigan. And those are the two communities I'll refer to when I say the Independent Regional Partnership. And then the supplemental to Toledo, as I said, those would exist as they are now. It would just be a plant that would supplement the existing Toledo plant, so.
Could you just tell us how you said it wasn't feasible to serve some of these other communities, and what communities did you consider and what drove that decision?
The proposal listed a handful of communities. A number of those were down quite a ways south of the city of Sylvania. And in evaluating the information we collected on the water distribution system and how that system operated, it would take a large amount of money and infrastructure to be able to get the water you needed down that far south.
And the communities you're talking about are?
Monclova, City of Holland, even Maumee, Richmond.
You look at Perrysburg, Springfield Township.
So it was the distribution that was the
it just wasn't the problem. Feasible for the number of users that you would pick up to help share in the cost. Yeah, it was just economically.
Sort of like a bicycle wheel. Right now it starts in the city of Toledo and radiates out. So to try to circumvent that around the outside, you would take a lot of pump stations and large water mains and through difficult areas to run that infrastructure. So we tried to look at a independent partnership that was feasible to construct and sort of just a cost mode, as well as being able to serve it in a reliable fashion and not have to redo a lot of the infrastructure that already serves those communities from Toledo in an efficient manner as it is now.
Okay.
Somewhat related question. What is the benefit to the South County system in joining in with the Sylvania system?
Well, the main driver for including South County is the source water. Lake Erie is the logical place to get your raw water. We looked at groundwater, we looked at a handful of other potential source waters, but the quantity that you need and the reliability that you need, Lake Erie is the obvious choice. So if you're going to construct the infrastructure with an intake and a raw water pumping station and a water treatment plant and pump that through South County to get down to Sylvania, it makes a lot of sense to serve those customers that you're going by.
Where do they get their water now?
Right now, they are served by the city of Toledo. So they're a customer just like Sylvania.
Okay.
So and we have that listed, and it's in Figure 14, I think, in your report too. It shows how we may change some of their system to be able to serve us in a reliable fashion.
13 or 9?
That may be 9.
And they too own their distribution system.
Yes, they purchase water from Toledo and then they own and maintain their water distribution system. Any more questions along those lines?
Brent, I do want to point out to council that there have not, to this point, there have not been discussions with Southern Monroe County as to forming that partnership, or are they interested, or does it make financial sense for them? But it's it's just looked at from the city of Sylvania side of that equation. So
yeah, and just to further that, any information that I present in these reports or in written was obtained through a FOIA request or through the Michigan Department of Environmental Quality, provided some information about their historical water use. So with those three scenarios outlined, the first thing we had to do is develop a basis of designs. So the Sylvania option alone, we looked at your historical average and max day, and through that evaluation, we determined that a 6.5 million gallon per day plant could serve Sylvania alone. We looked at the information on the South County water system in Sylvania and determined that an 18 million gallon per day plant could serve those two communities with some allowance for slight expansion. And then the trickier one was the Toledo supplemental. What we did there was we knew the average and max day demands for the Toledo system as a whole, and our intent was not to completely replace the Collins Park plant, but just to supplement it. So if you had an emergency situation, it would be enough capacity to basically keep the pipes full and keep the system in operation, but it would be under a limited criteria, assuming that it would be an emergency scenario where water reduction has been put in place. So to develop that sizing, we looked at the average day demand, and then we took guidelines for what the ratio is for the minimum demand to the average. Typically that is 50 to 75% of your average day demand. So 75% of the Toledo demand is roughly 60 MGD or million gallons per day. And that's the criteria that we ended up at, was we developed cost estimates for the supplemental Toledo option at a 60 million gallon per day capacity. So those are the three different scenarios and the capacities that were outlined and how we arrived at those. Now, some of the things that are common between the scenarios, the city currently leases land for use for a raw water pumping station up by the consumer's power. It's in Erie Township in Monroe County, Michigan. And we considered various different sites for an intake to get water from Lake Erie. But with the city already owning that property and then the evaluation on water quality in the Western Basin, really any location that's a feasible distance from Sylvania is as good as the consumer's site. So we proceeded with developing that concept for a water system based on the site you guys already own or have leased. So the intake would be a pipeline that would go out to a crib approximately 3 miles out into Lake Erie. And depending on which scenario you're looking at, the pipeline and the cribs change. But then the next portion of that would be a raw water pumping station that would collect the water from Lake Erie and then pump it to a water treatment plant that would be located further inland. We looked at a handful of potential locations along Erie Road, and we have those shown in that elliptical hatch. Any location in that area would be as good as another, but we had to pick one just to base our cost estimate on. And then for the Sylvania alone option, which isn't shown on this figure, it would just be one long transmission main running down to Sylvania. Straightforward enough. The redundant supply would assume to be maintained from Toledo. The independent regional partnership, we laid out, we gathered information on the water system for Sylvania and South County, and we modeled those combined systems together under various demand scenarios. And we determined that we would have to make some modifications to the Monroe County system, creating several pressure districts and modifying the way they operate their system as it exists now. The two blue tanks here at the bottom are where they currently get their water from Toledo. They have ground storage tanks where Toledo dumps water into those and then they repump out into their system. And they currently have two pressure districts. Like I said, we would divide it into three. But in general, the water would be coming from the water treatment plant located along Erie Road, be pumped to the west, and then down through Bedford Township. And then the two red lines would be redundant 16-inch transmission mains. Normally, water can flow by gravity from Bedford Township down to Sylvania, but under emergency conditions or high water demand, you would need booster pump stations. And we show those right near the Whiteford Township, Bedford Township border. The plan would be to leave your ground storage tank in operation, using it as inline booster station, but the ground storage tank would just kind of remain available but in standby. And we would continue to use your Burnham and Fossil Park elevated storage tanks. And the assumption would be that Sylvania would continue to sort of own and operate their water distribution system. Furthering the discussion on the water treatment plant, all three scenarios assume a conventional treatment plant with flocculation, sedimentation, and dual media filtration. We do assume the use of ozone that would help to address concerns with taste and odor as well as microcystins. So after developing these different concepts, we were able to gather cost estimates. The cost estimates for the three different scenarios were developed using past projects, industry guidelines for cost estimating, as well as quotes from vendors. And those cost estimates, along with operation and maintenance costs, which included electricity, chemicals, labor, and then miscellaneous, were given to our rate consultant, UFS. From there, UFS was able to develop a rate structure for the scenarios that I listed, as well as maintaining service from Toledo. And
you want to just run through those costs, yep, real quick, Brian, and then on the capital costs, which are shown on this board, but you guys probably can't read. I think it's table 14.
No, 16. Table 16 on page 55 is the same thing that's shown on the poster board right there. The three different scenarios I mentioned, the Sylvania loan, the total capital cost that we arrived at was $132 million. And that included annual O&M costs of $1.9 million. The independent regional partnership was $223 million with an O&M cost of $3.1 million. And then the 60 MGD supplemental to Toledo option was $335 million with $12 million of O&M costs. And like I said, those cost estimates were given to UFS. UFS gathered historical information about the financial strength of Sylvania and developed a recommended rate structure for staying with Toledo and maintaining that service, going off and building a water plant that would serve Sylvania alone or joining an independent regional partnership. So the rate track that are shown on the poster boards now that are up here take us from 2016 through 2045. We obtained the information that Sylvania currently charges to their customers, and then using the recommended rate increases that are shown in table 22 on page 67, we were able to develop and project into the future what those water rates would be if you either stayed with Toledo, built your own plant, or joined a regional partnership.
So this chart graphs the data in table 22, and then the numbers were normalized based on average consumption of 7,500 gallons per month based on the water rate currently charged as a starting point. And then rate increases were assumed, you can see in the schedule there, for the maintained service with Toledo as it is here in the blue, and then the independent regional, and then Sylvania alone in the green line. So what this is effectively showing is average monthly water rate versus year projected out into the future. You can see initially there's a steeper curve on each of these that represents what you would have in terms of rate increases, where you would have larger rate increases compared to staying with Toledo alone in the initial portion of service. That would be not only to pay current costs and bond costs, but it would also be to build up a cash reserve to handle ongoing costs down the road, such as replacement costs and ongoing maintenance. But you can see that, particularly with Sylvania alone, you'll have a number of years with a significant rate increase, and then it'll steady out for both of those, is what was assumed in the model, that you would only have subsequent rate increases of about 1.5 to 2% for inflation moving forward. And then for Toledo, it was assumed you would have basically the rate increases that are already known and on the books, and then it was assumed from that point forward it would be about 4% per year, which was a number that I think has been used in other studies for that system. So we just carry that forward. So this really represents a snapshot in time. If those, you know, that changes, the model would change accordingly. If there was a bigger rate increase in Toledo, you'd see a higher steep or a steeper incline, and then these numbers would effectively intersect. But what this is predicting, that is, in today's dollars with these assumptions, about 2034, with the independent regional system, the cost, monthly cost for water would about equate between the independent regional system and staying with Toledo as is, based on the current rate structure, versus the Sylvania loan option that would, you know, be all the way out to 2042, where those lines would intersect, where those numbers, those monthly costs would be about the same. So that was the probably all the work came into, and that's the nutshell, really, in terms of what we're trying to get to and predict. I think the Blade stated it pretty well in the first article that I saw when the study came out after the press release, was that they were looking at it as being economically feasible. They didn't necessarily say that each option made economic sense, but that, yeah, you could get enough capital to do it yourself. But, you know, obviously that going in alone, you can see the power of having more users in the mix to decrease those long-term costs. So
now to do this, we would have to, I assume, bond the entire construction effectively.
It would be a bond issue, and in fact, the other thing that UFS looked at was actually doing a delayed bond issue, where you would not have to start your bond payments for 2 to 3 years while you build up that cash reserve. So you know, it would be, all those things would need to be assumed, I guess, verified along the way, all those assumptions. But
the time to act, from the time we said go until we have a water system online,
let's say 5 years.
5 years.
Yeah, and but you'd start increasing rates right away.
I know there's some significant, I know you were, you know, some design work and planning work.
Right.
When would we, I mean, I assume we would do, would we roll bonds, or would we bond it all up front, or did you look at any, did you consider
we
any of that?
We didn't get that detailed. We looked at bonding it all at once for the most part.
Okay, that's all you need.
There's other earlier figures in here that show the same type of information, only it does it on a cash accrual basis.
Okay, yeah. I remember I spent some time with that yesterday, but didn't.
Yeah, so you'll see it, and I'm trying to, there may be two bond issues in there, actually, now I'm looking at the curve. But you could do that. You could bond for a portion of it to get it going, and then...
You could bond the design and then bond construction separately, I suppose.
If you needed to, you certainly could. Yeah. The design cost will be, you know, a fraction of the overall construction cost. So you could do a bond issue early to cover that cost. Yeah, there's a lot of... We probably didn't evaluate every option of ways you could do that.
Okay. These numbers assume that we're going to start like now, right? If we, obviously we're not in a position to start this now. So if it takes us a year, 2 years to negotiate and put together our partnerships,
right?
Does that just move everything out? Is that fair? Or does it move it out and up a little bit? Or
yeah, you know, I think it, for the most part, in the time scale of a year or two, it's just going to move it out. Certainly,
okay.
You could. But the nice thing is that model is built, and so it's easy to modify that. It's easy to look at the different scenarios now by looking at those core assumptions, and those are listed in the report as well. UFS, you know, it's a very easily modified model. It's certainly a tool that the city could use moving forward. If you wanted to revisit it in a year or two, it would be quite easy to plug the new, you know, look at the assumptions that were used, update those, and get new data within a very short period of time. So.
I think I know the answer to this question, but I want to hear it from you.
Okay.
We don't, obviously, the line that isn't here is the regional, is what would happen to regional rates in the city of Sylvania. And why is that?
Well, in simple terms, because it wasn't in the scope, but part of the reason for that is it really relies on getting a lot more information from Toledo on the billing structures and from the other regional partners. It could certainly be done. It wasn't included in this study. You're saying if you stayed with a regional system that, like scenario three.
Scenario three, yeah.
And work that out, so.
Actually, if I could interrupt, Doug, that is included in the Tima Cog study.
Yeah.
If you've seen the executive summary with that or read it in the paper, those numbers are published there.
Yeah. There are assumptions on those too.
Yeah, their scenario three is basically the regional system. Now, it doesn't include that second feed, this redundant system, to be able to supplement their existing treatment plan. But their scenario three is basically the regional system.
I think, coming out of this, I think we're going to talk about this, exploring this further in a utilities committee meeting, and it would be good. I don't have those. I don't have that Temecog study. I don't know that if we could get that.
We could put that into
a Dropbox.
A Dropbox.
Get that to us.
And/or I'll see if we can.
You should see the whole study, but
yeah.
There is an executive summary. It's only 4 pages long.
Yeah.
Like these charts gives you the whole story.
Yeah. Okay.
And that study had an alternative 4 in the appendix as well, didn't it? That they looked at a couple different.
The appendix, yes.
Cost sharing options.
Yes.
Any other questions? Again, thank you very much for having us.
Mr. Mayor, I'd like to just thank John and Brian for the work that they did. They were diligent on sticking after me when they needed information to move forward on the study. And I think the result that we got and the report that we got is a very good product and something that can be relied on. They were good at looking at it from a real standpoint and not wanting the numbers to come out in a certain manner. And at the same time, you know, not favorable so that the rates are really low, or not ultra conservative so that the rates are extra high and scare everybody away. You know, this report and the numbers are what we will be using to make decisions that are going to affect people for decades to come. So they need to be real. And I think John and Brian did a great job at doing that. So I appreciate their work.
Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you very much. And we've seen a couple of cards around. If you should have any questions, don't hesitate, to let Kevin know or call us direct. Thank you.
We'll probably call Kevin.
Force of habit.
That falls under the category. Mr. Mayor, we talked about doing this study, and we committed some significant resources to it, and I think it's it's a good launching point for us now to do some more work. And I know you're working with Temecog and our other partners, but I think it'd be good for council to think about this a little more, look at this study a little more, look at it in conjunction with the Temecog study, and maybe get together and talk about this. Before too long, and get some, and also get the benefit of your extensive work on this issue, and begin to understand where we're going with that. And I don't think we want to do that in a full council meeting. I don't want to spend the time there, but I think it would be appropriate, therefore, to refer this to our utilities committee for additional consideration and discussion. And I'd be very interested in your thoughts on that, too.
It's good for all of us to be on the same page as to where these discussions are going to go. There is an atmosphere in the region right now that was not present in the late 1990s or early 2000s when we were looking at a separate water system. And the reason is twofold. One, the contracts are now expiring that Toledo has with all the outlying suburbs. And those suburbs are looking for other solutions. They are tired of the escalating cost and paying more than their fair share for the cost of the Toledo water operation. And two is the safety issue that was introduced 2 years ago when Toledo's single water intake treatment plant and high pressure pumping station were shut down for 2 days. That's an unacceptable position to be in. Toledo was trying to rectify that situation by building another 40 million gallons per day at the Collins Park water treatment plant, so they could run one side of the plant or the other if one side was contaminated, but it doesn't solve the problem of the intake, and it doesn't solve the problem of their high-pressure pumping station, which has six very large pumps in it, big electric pumps. But it's still one installation that can go down. I had lunch with Ohio EPA Director Craig Butler 2 years ago, more than 2 years ago, when he made this case to me then, saying that this is just unacceptable that Toledo and its suburbs, for the most part, are relying on one water source, one water intake, one treatment plant, one pumping station, that is almost unprecedented in the country. And he is looking for solutions and has told me he will try to bring state dollars to help fix that situation. And either of these, or any of these three solutions we're looking at, I think that we will also be able to bring some Michigan dollars to it as well. So there are some real possibilities out there that did not exist 10 or 15 years ago. And I think that here in the region, we all need to take the time, not just to understand the facts, but to find a path that we can get this work done for the future, to solve the safety issue one, and the economic development issue two, and that vision seems to be forming around these three reports. And I think this city council needs to be on top of it. City of Sylvania is hoping to meet this situation, and I need all of you to understand what's going on and be prepared with accurate answers if you get quizzed by residents from Sylvania or elsewhere or from the press. This is a very big issue. This is the sort of issue that will affect our region for decades to come. It's probably the most important thing that any of us will work on. And we are thrust into a leadership position on this. So I agree. If it's a utility committee meeting, we'll help with that. I think we should do that. If you want the consultants to come back, we'll try to schedule a time when they can do that. Kevin and I are familiar with the other two studies. We can talk it through. There are a lot of issues. There's a lot of different points of view to be involved in this. And the key is going to be not to push anything down any other community's throat, whether it's Toledo, whether it's Shawnee or Perrysburg or Oregon, but to ask each community, what would make this valuable for you? What would make this something that you can sign on to? And that's what we're trying to do right now. I'm sure that we'll have trouble along the way. There's lots of challenges, lots of decisions, and lots of information still to be gathered. But I think today at the FEMA Club meeting, we made it past where the last two or three regional water studies failed before, when we had the biggest player in the room say, this is all interesting, but we're not going to play. That's not what happened today. They also know that Sylvania has a real option to step away. And even though for 16 years our residents might pay more for water, but I think Toledo's rates will increase greater than that, and it won't be 16 years until that happens. Maumee and Perrysburg are looking very seriously at the Wood County study because Maumee can just jump across the Maumee River and they can tie into that system. I talked to Mayor Carr of Maumee about it today, saying that the best thing that we can do short of a regional system is a broader-based regional system where the Wood County and Bowling Green systems can feed through Maumee and come up the west side of Lucas County and tie into the Sylvania system
So we have the redundancy of those two or three systems tied together. And Toledo is definitely threatened by that. Waterville's already pulled out. They are going to the Bowling Green system. The Bowling Green plant is right across the river from them. They're already making the connection underneath the Maumee River that could benefit our regional system, with or without Toledo. So Toledo and Mayor Paula Hicks Hudson and City Council President Steve Steele are all on board. It's clear from the reaction of the administrators that I talked to today that that is the order coming down from the mayor's office. We are going to explore this. We are going to find the best option. Or they could be left high and dry, they know.
Well, you know, some of us have been on council when we did not have as friendly a hearing from the city of Toledo. And this is a good development, and I think that's why we agreed to fund this study in the first place, was so that we would be able to get to the table where we could have these sorts of discussions.
I was very pleased the Blade Reporter asked me and put into his article that we had the paper that the city of Sylvania had other communities donate $55,000 of the $104,000 cost of this study, more than half of it, because they were interested. And I think I've gotten questions from most of them in the last couple of days, why weren't we included in the independent water system? The question you ask. Well, the answer that these gentlemen gave you is the exact right answer. It's very expensive to do it. But another answer is, they're in the Lucas County Water District. Lucas County will determine where they're going, not the Sylvania Township trustees, not the Sylvania Township or the Springfield Township trustees. Maumee can determine their own way, but it's a long way from Sylvania to Maumee. It's shorter to Perrysburg. And there is some question where Lucas County would come down if we don't have a fully regional system, and that's what the county commissioner is going for. All three county commissioners were there today, and they all said they support a broad-based regional solution. None of them said they support a independent regional system. That goes against their grain. There's a lot of undercurrent to understand here.
Well, we obviously have work,
lots of challenges to face. Mr. Mishka, maybe now is a good time to try and schedule your utilities committee meeting.
I'm assuming that everybody want to be part of that, not just the committee members, right?
Yeah.
Is that fair?
Yeah. You can call it a committee meeting of the whole if you want.
You can call it a committee meeting of the whole.
Depends who wants to be in the chair, and I think perhaps you should be in the chair. You're really not going to take any, there's no votes to take unless you want to have it accept the report vote or something. Our next council meeting is 4 weeks from tonight on August 15th. Probably ought to do it before then.
The next one is on the 15th, you said, right?
Yep.
How is the committee with Fridays, if we start with that?
The 10th.
Anytime Friday mornings, 29th, 5th, 12th?
Mr. Mishka, I don't have a problem with scheduling on Fridays, but I'm going to have a ton of questions for these gentlemen. So
would you rather do
to be fair, I would want to give them a little more time to respond, and I think that would help provide a little context for other members of council. So I would prefer to do it, you know, that first week of August or the second week of August. Just to give them the time to respond back with the information for council members to digest it.
Mr. Pry, I take it that you're going to prepare a list of questions similar that you did to street.
Well, that's just a warm-up compared to this.
Good for you. Please direct it to them.
I will.
Jason, I have a standing conflict on the 12th. I could do the 15th.
How about either the...
Well, how about
okay
the
on the 5th. Yeah, morning of the 5th. There's another activity that Friday afternoon, Mrs. Hudson would like us to remember.
So the morning is fine.
It would be hard for me to do, but that's...
Can you do the morning?
I will make it happen.
So if these gentlemen were to join us that morning, and they're coming from Grand Rapids, is 9 o'clock a good time for everybody, or is that push a little bit too much? Or 8 o'clock?
It's fine.
As early as possible for me, but...
Is 8 o'clock...
Can we just say 8:30?
8:30?
August 5th?
August 5th, 8:30.
I am personally at the we're going to be taking my daughter to Mayo for just a regular doctor appointment, but that's one that's hard to reschedule.
Sure is.
Brian is available, and I'm sure we can have other folks that work on the report to support him. So, does that work for you, Brian? So, yeah, we can do that.
Well, what about the 4th? What about the 3rd? Would the day before be better?
I'm going to be gone.
You're gone the whole week?
Okay. Yeah, I'm sorry about that.
That's okay.
So if the 5th is, if that's to be the only other, you can have somebody supplement that.
Yeah.
We'll go for the August 5th at 8:30.
And just how long, Mr. Mishka, would you anticipate the meeting being?
What time is the SCADA that same?
I think it's at noon.
I have 12:30 written down.
Yeah, I think so. We're not going to do more than 2 hours. I don't think. I think that's...
Yeah, I think that's about the limit.
That's about the limit.
You mentioned that you're able to put the questions together ahead of time.
Oh, yeah, there'll be... You'll have a... I want you guys to have the opportunity to digest the questions.
And we'll let Mr. Aller decide whether they are appropriate directly to him or it'll go through Mr. Aller.
That's fine. I'll send it to Kevin.
They're scary.
And you'll turn them over to Mr. Shaw.
We're going to do that here, right? Chambers?
This is fine, unless you'd rather have a more intimate setting. We can do it in the utility conference room, but with all 7 of us,
it gets pretty tight.
You plus me, plus Kevin, plus them, it gets a little tight in there.
We can do it here, that's fine.
All right. If that's the decision, we'll have the clerk post that date. Friday, August 5th at 8:30 a.m. in this meeting room. Anything further at this time? All right, terrific. Thank you for your travel here today, tonight, gentlemen. Have a safe trip back.
Thank you.
I can say that there was another gentleman here last Friday for the press conference. He came up from Cincinnati, I believe.
Yep.
He must be familiar with the study as well.
Yes.
Okay.
He worked on it as well.
I think we're done with the discussion. You're welcome to start your travel back.
All right. Thanks very much.
Thank you for being here. All right. I believe the rest of our agenda will go a little bit quicker, but we'll see. Let's go to agenda item 7, which is the service director's report about the sanitary sewer lining project and the request to authorize the clerk to advertise for bids. Mr. Aller.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. The lining technique is something that is fairly new and at the same time becoming commonplace. It's an option that allows you to fix sewers that have leaky joints, broken down joints, minor structural damage, and not have to dig your streets up, and which is obviously much more costly. We have approximately 7,100 feet of sanitary sewer that we'd like to do that lining process on. And we're also partnering with Lucas County Sanitary Engineer's Office on lining wet wells and manholes in the sanitary sewer system for a total of about 525 vertical feet of manholes and wet wells and pumping stations. This is a joint project with the sanitary engineer. We approved that joint agreement in 2015, November of 2015, as part of a OPWC grant application. The total estimated cost of the project is $648,994. Almost half of that is covered through that OPWC grant with $318,007. We're responsible for approximately 35% of the project at $228,380, and the sanitary engineer's office is in for the remainder of $102,607. Depending on weather, temperatures, and things of that nature, it would depend on when the project would actually be completed. But it isn't, we're giving the contractor until June of next year to allow for those weather considerations. So we are ready to move forward, and we would request that the clerk be authorized to advertise for bids.
A couple of questions I think we should ask before we do that, Kevin. First is, how long will these kinds of repairs last?
The beginning lining projects that were done in the late 70s, early 80s are still in place and still operating. They're basically providing a 50-year life on the product. And, to date, no issues with projects that are performed properly.
That's very fine. It's so much less expensive than digging up the roads.
Much less expensive.
And then the second question is, how disruptive will this be for our residents and businesses? I know we've done these before and it hasn't been very disruptive, but we need to discuss that.
Yep, we will be, it'll be short term. Most of these sewers, some are in the middle of the street, some are along the edge. As far as traffic disruptions, they'll be minimal. We'll be able to maintain at least one lane during the construction of the project. As far as service interruptions, it'll be just short-term disruptions where the day of that street being done, for instance, we're doing sections of Erie Street or Garden Park Drive. While that section is being done, the residents there will be asked to not utilize their sinks or showers or things of that nature after the morning rush, of course. We give people a chance to get that morning work out of the way, and then the project will be constructed. The lining will go in, it'll be pressurized, cured, and then a robotic cutter will go in and open up their service as soon as it's cured, and they're right back in service. So less than a day's disruption while that particular street is being taken care of.
A lot less than tearing up your street.
Yes.
But still will cause some inconvenience.
Yes. It will be, depending on the size of the sewer and the length, you can typically do 1 to 2 manhole sections a day, which is about 800 feet. So it just kind of depends. Again, the weather, the material is so weather dependent that some days it cures faster than it does other days. So it just kind of depends.
Thank you.
I guess it's obvious communication is the biggest thing.
Yes. Yep.
And this is obviously in the 2017 budget, which we haven't done work with. This is just advertised the bid so that we're prepared to do
actually
that at the time, right?
It is in this year's bid. It's in 2016 budget.
Okay.
We will have to put it under contract this year, and it'll be in this year's budget.
Yeah, okay. I thought that
but this is a terrific use of OPWC funding and the cooperation of Lucas County engineer. To have us only paying about a third of the project is just a great deal for us.
Mr. Mayor, I authorize the clerk to advertise bids for the City of Sylvania and Lucas County Sanitary Engineer Sanitary Lining Project.
Second.
And moved and seconded to authorize the clerk of council to advertise for bids for this sanitary lining project. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. What's your schedule anticipated to be, Kevin?
We plan on being back for approval at the first meeting in September, approval of bids at the first meeting in September.
All right, thank you. Agenda item eight, we have taken bids on refuse and recycling. You have the service director's report in front of you. We, good results on the bids, but Kevin, why don't you go over the bids?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. We did receive, we advertised for bids and had two plan holders. Both Allied Waste Services and Waste Management took plan documents out, but we received just one bid. Waste Management declined to submit, indicating that they just didn't feel, being new to the system, they didn't feel that they could prepare a competitive and all-inclusive bid. It takes, as you can imagine, this type of service, you're coming in, you're trying to establish those routes and things of that nature, and they just didn't feel that they could submit a bid in that time frame. We did extend the bid, actually beyond what we had originally anticipated, but they still did not submit one. So we have the refuse collection cost will increase approximately 3% over what we are currently paying, and the recycling cost will increase approximately 20% over what we're currently paying. The increase in the recycling collection was anticipated. The higher increase was anticipated because the commodity market for the recycling materials is extremely poor right now. Some of the materials, you know, they're getting less than half of what they were getting probably 4 or 5 years ago. And, you know, unfortunately, the processing costs, the collection costs, and all of that, you know, continue to climb, but yet the revenue that you're getting for the commodity at the end is dropping. So we did anticipate a higher increase on the recycling side. Our total costs for both refuse and recycling will go from currently $9.54 to $10.34 per household on September 1st, if we were to enter into this contract with Allied Waste. That pricing is right in line with other contracts that they have locally with the City of Toledo and the City of Maumee. I believe to be good pricing. We have historically gotten what I believe is good service from, even though the contract is with Allied Waste Services, that's a corporate issue. It'll continue to be Republic Services provides it. And, you know, it would be my recommendation that we move forward with a contract with Allied Waste Services into the future. This is a 5-year contract and with a possible 5-year renewal at the end of 2021.
I don't know what the experience of council members is, but since the beginning of this contract over the last 3 or 4 years, I am not getting any complaints about our refuse pickup. We did get some prior to that, people would be missed or something like that, but my experience is this contractor is providing a very good service, and it's a service that goes to every one of our residential residents. I have no qualms with awarding this new contract, especially since the numbers seem to be in line. However, the current contract is not over until August 31st, and there is no change in suppliers. So if this is something that council would like to take a closer look at, there is certainly no time pressure to do so, to approve it tonight. There are some options that you may want to discuss if it goes to committee. Those are listed after the service director's report here in the inner two sheets. Ones of particular interest that we took were on the refuse bid to have a contractor supply 95-gallon or 65-gallon rolling cart similar to what we have for recycling, and you'd see $8.88 a month, that more than doubles the cost of the service. Or is that, that is the service with the cart? Maybe I'm missing.
Service with the cart.
That's the service with the cart. So it increases it $2.08 a stop. I would hope that at some time in the future, that's going to be either a no cost or a lower cost, because then the machine will pick up the refuse as it does with recycling now. But I'm not sure that that's something we need to do. We did it with recycling because we were having it blowing around the neighborhoods and we wanted covered containers. That has worked out well.
Yeah, I will admit, I just don't, I don't understand the bid sheet.
And then,
so maybe we ought to.
And then if you go over the other one, I think you ought to take a look at is the weekly collection of recyclable materials. That was specifically requested, perhaps by you, Mr. Hayden, as I recall.
So, yeah.
And it would be a change from $3.54 to $4.08 a month. I know in my household, we do fill up the container every 2 weeks. And occasionally we'll let it go 4 weeks when we're not home for the pickup and we make it last. And we have a smaller container, but there are residences in town that have said that they have a problem with that, and they have a second container at no additional charge, I assume.
That's correct.
To the resident.
Is that right? You can get a second container at no additional charge?
That's correct. If we don't do it just on a simple request, we have to see that they are exceeding the volume of the cart. We don't want a bunch of carts
right
everywhere. So, yeah.
So those are a couple of the options you might want to review.
Okay, so this rate that you're talking about, okay, that's 9. The 10.34 is the refuse bid, the residential cost fee per month plus the recyclable bid.
Correct.
And then each of these other things, and then there's a fuel charge, fuel surcharge program.
Correct.
Based on 250. Then each of these alternates are additional costs per unit.
Yes, the costs, on the refuse bid, the items, the first three items, the refuse bid, each home, our cost per home will be $6.80. Should they have, that's based on a three container limit. So should they have a container need more space than three containers, then they need to come to our office and purchase a bag or a tag that they put on that item.
Yeah.
And that's $2.25.
Yeah.
And right. If they have a large item, they come and get a bulky item sticker, and that's $12.50. The rest of the items there, the alternates, are the alternates 1 and 2 would be our spring and fall collection costs, and that those costs do go up approximately $1,000 in this contract. It's currently about $25,000, and that charge there equates to about $26,000.
So these two charges are additional to the rate charge that you mentioned in your memo.
That's correct.
And do we, for those that we bill, do we bill those separately?
No, that is we pay a lump sum in the fall and we pay a lump sum in the spring. The costs for that program are included in what we charge those that don't pay income tax. It is included in the cost of the refuse and recycling program.
Mr. Hayden, I think you had
maybe
suggested
we're
referring. I mean, I think you're getting into some good conversation here, but perhaps you could make that referral.
And I had expected that, Doug.
Okay, I'm sorry.
The question I have is whether or not we can do it on the same day that we have a utilities committee meeting on August 5th. Is there time to cover this as well? Or
why don't we do it before our next meeting?
We can do that too.
Do a separate time. Because I don't think it will take all that long.
Does that give us enough time to do the contract needs to be renewed?
18.
That's the last meeting before the contract, the last scheduled meeting before the contract. August 31st.
You don't have a lot of options. I think you need to be thinking about the alternates, but I think we can...
Well, we really don't have any options.
Sure, right. Well, you have only alternate bids you can accept. You don't have an option for another supplier.
Right.
So how about August 15th at 6:30?
Well, does that give us enough time to shift gears into creating legislation? I mean, can we just meet a half hour earlier ahead of our meeting on the 5th?
Yeah, let's do that.
I mean, you know, we don't have to drive in from Grand Rapids, right?
Meet at 8? Okay. And we're going to call that all the Utilities Committee, correct?
Yeah.
So we'll just move the start of that meeting to 8.
So Sharon, you need to change your posting just a little bit. And I think that's a good schedule. Kevin, any comments about that?
No.
I think the contractor's going to have a problem with the delay.
No, I don't think so. No.
It would be a problem if we were switching suppliers, but this is not.
Yeah, no, that's fine. There's a lot of numbers in there, and I apologize. I did not apparently do a good enough job of providing the information. So I deal with it on a daily basis, so I don't want to take a moment. But I can, I'll have a summary to council before that meeting. So.
All right. Very good.
Good job getting the successful bids, Kevin. I appreciate it. All right, I think if council's ready, let's move on in our agenda since that's been referred. We'll bring that ordinance back at the next meeting, of course. But let's go on to agenda item 9, which is a zoning ordinance CA2 2016. This is from the Toledo Lucas County Library. And the library has purchased additional sites, and they've already built their parking lot on them. These are sites that were purchased at the corner or near the corner of Sylvania and King. Subsequent to them purchasing the lot in front of the bus garage on King Road. Those lots were purchased and then they brought them to us and they were annexed into the city. And now that they've been annexed, they are asking that we rezone those lots to match the zoning on where the actual library building is being built, to go from a residential zoning to a B1B. That's what this one is about. Makes sense to me, but it needs to follow the process and go to the Plan Commission for their recommendation and then come back. Mr. Hanum.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I move we refer application number ZA2-2016 to the Planning Commission for its review and recommendation.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to refer zoning amendment petition ZA2-2016 to the Municipal Planning Commission for their study, review, and recommendation. On a side note, I did have a discussion with Charlie Oswanski. Their construction for the new library is on time. The contractor is obligated to have it done by August the 3rd. I talked directly to the contractor about it, who's working for me on another project. He agreed that it would be done. Then the library will take a little while to set it up to move all their materials in, but they're looking for a September or October grand opening and opening date.
Can we have a second side note? I think we may have read in the newspaper that the proposed sidewalk from the library to Southview was to have had one less partner in terms of the township stepping back. I am told that this is on their agenda tomorrow night to reconsider that decision. They have to have some sort of legislation to change a regulation. And there's some thinking among optimistic people who work at the library that they might be back in.
Charlie agrees with your thinking. Yes. We hope that that is a successful effort.
They canceled it? Oh, I don't know. Is that right?
All right.
I was told somewhere right.
All right. There was a, we've had our motion, but not the vote to refer this to the Planning Commission. All in favor of the motion indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carries, and it's officially referred. Thank you. Moving on to Agenda Item 10, you have another new piece of legislation. Actually, there's a couple more, and these are ones that you may choose to refer also for further study. The first one, it has to do with the juvenile diversion program. As you're aware, Savannah Area Family Services administers a juvenile diversion program with the promise that if you successfully complete the program, that your record as a juvenile can be expunged. However, that is not what state law permits. We can change that, and the police department is asking for clarification as to what they should do. Chief Rodas, is that accurate? And Leslie, that's what this is about. And the program has been successful. It limits it to first offenders for the most part. And the promise has been that we are expunged their records, but apparently the police department is obligated by state law not to totally expunge the records until they get clarification from city council. Mm-hmm. So that's what this one's about. Leslie, perhaps you need to expound on that one.
Sure. Thank you, Mr. Mayor. You did a great job summarizing. The Ohio Revised Code is a little bit unclear because there's technically the expungement and sealing statutes require some sort of commencing of court action. And in a diversion program, there is no court action. That's kind of the point of a diversion program. So this is just to clarify and provide guidance and an official procedure for how the chief or his designee handles those juveniles who have successfully completed our diversion program.
So Leslie, so I understand,
yes.
If we approve this tonight, mm-hmm. we would be able to continue to expunge the record?
Correct. That would effectively seal them, so that
way. Expunge is the wrong word.
Right. This actually seals them, so mm-hmm. that in the, if somebody commits a minor offense, which is, that's all that our juvenile diversion
right.
program is used for, in the future, any job that they apply for, if they've only had this one case, it doesn't continue to haunt them for the
right.
No, the
I understand.
Next 20
that,
years.
Yeah. Yeah, I just want—I was on the Family Services Board
okay.
when this was brought into being, and
mm-hmm.
we had the first couple years worth of reports, and it's phenomenally successful
mm-hmm.
in keeping
correct.
Kids who shouldn't be in the justice system
right.
out of the justice
right.
system.
Right. Yes. So
I just
want
to make sure that that
correct.
Was the is the intent of this legislation.
Yes, it doesn't affect the diversion program at all. It just affects how we are able to. Limit access to the records of the people that
same
have been involved.
Same outcome, different
correct.
Process,
yes.
right?
Okay. Yes.
Am I right? This is effectively, we are exercising prosecutorial discretion not to pursue the charge.
Correct. Well, actually, the prosecutor's office is in our, well, yes, the juvenile prosecutor's,
but
the Lucas
the,
County,
the
correct.
Essentially, the police are choosing
correct.
Not to pursue the charge.
Right.
Not to refer.
They believe that they are good right. candidates for the program.
Prosecutorial discretion
yeah.
in a broad sense,
correct.
Not involving.
Correct.
So that we don't, so there is no charge.
Right. Right. Which is why there's ambiguity in the correct procedure on how to handle them. So this clarifies
question.
That.
Is there, are you saying that currently they really are not sealed and this would allow them to be sealed?
Correct. They are, this would more, this would restrict. Any record of being of
would past ones be subject to this rule as well then?
This is just going forward,
okay.
how we handle them going forward. If a juvenile is committed, is gone through the diversion program in the past, they're still sealed, but just to a lesser degree.
But this
yeah.
in no way changes the outcome.
No.
Okay, this is just
no.
a different way to
just,
get to the same.
Just a procedural clarification
right.
on what we are allowed and obligated
yeah.
to maintain if it's allowed to be in the docket sheet or if we can
yeah.
obliterate it from any
yeah.
docket
okay.
sheet.
And then I appreciate you and the chief bringing this forward because
oh.
I would hate to see
right.
a very, very good program
correct.
Change up in any way.
Correct. Yeah.
We effectively exercising a home rule authority here?
We are, Mr. Hanum. We are not the first ones, though. Upper Arlington, we've modeled this after Upper Arlington's diversion program and how they handle.
They do it at UA.
That's my.
The issue is an open, there's an open records issue here.
Right.
And so what we're saying is, we're saying this is not a.
Because the.
Open record, we're declaring these confidential.
Right.
And we can win that if we get sued on it.
Correct. I've talked at length with the Upper Arlington Law Department.
Okay. I'm all for it.
Yeah.
Just wondering.
We.
I'm trying to understand.
Because it's juveniles and because the Ohio Revised Code does not specifically define what classifies contact with the court and a court action, it just is clarifying and providing the procedure by, for which we can seal the juvenile records that go through the diversion program.
It does nothing less than strengthen our ability to protect what we're trying to do.
Correct.
Let's pass this.
I'd like to introduce ordinance number 39-2016. All members of council having received copies in advance, I'll read by title only. Amending the Sylvania Codified Ordinances 1979 as amended by Chapter 165, Alternative Dispute Program, waiving the second and third readings and declaring an emergency.
Second.
Moved and seconded that ordinance number 39-2016 be read by title only and the second and third readings be waived. All in favor of that indicate by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Final passage.
I move final passage of ordinance number 39-2016.
Second.
Moved and seconded for final passage of ordinance 39-2016 as an emergency measure. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries and ordinance 39-2016 is approved. Moving on to agenda item 11. This is also a new issue that's come before you. This is a item requested and is already in place in many communities to be able to track items that are brought into a secondhand shop and paid for. This is not to restrict donations to something like the Goodwill. If you take your old clothes to the Goodwill, they're not going to ask you your name any more than they do now. However, if you take a television set or something to a pawn shop, or you take something else of value where you're paid for it, and you may have stolen it, the police department would like to have the ability, through its leads program that connects it with other police departments, the chance to find out who brought it in and got paid for this. And Chief, this morning you told me that this most other nearby communities have this in place already.
We're one of the last ones in this area.
What about Arlington?
We do.
You know, you've never been there, have you?
No second answer.
We do not have, we do not have a pawn shop in town. That's probably the reason why we don't have it at the moment. But we do have other shops where people come in and sell something. It could be the coin shop. Give me some other items. Plato's, see, I'm not familiar with that one. It's right next to Once Upon a Child. I'm familiar with that one, with a grandchild. And they go in, you sell stuff there, too. You resell it back in, but I'm not sure that people are doing it for profit. But.
Is this for just for profit or for non-profit secondhand clothing stores as well? So, for example, if Cancer Society.
I was referring to the person bringing it in profiting from it.
Right. If it's a donation, it does not apply. Goodwill.
What I'm concerned about is, does this create a burden for a nonprofit?
Me too.
We are not requiring nonprofits to be registered. Yeah.
That's by definition.
You answered my question.
So I read through this quickly, but I'd like to read through it a little more carefully.
Sure. No problem.
I'd like to refer this. Just to have some time to read it.
Yeah, so just as a clarification, so when mom takes in three bags of clothes to set it to Once Upon a Child down on Monroe Street?
We are going to work with Once Upon a Child has not been one that we've had an issue with. I know our police department has had some issues with Plato's Closet, specifically more expensive jeans. So I think we're going to work with them and set maybe a dollar threshold. You know, if you're bringing in five pairs of $300 jeans, that's going to raise an eyebrow. But if you're bringing in three bags of two-year-old clothes, you know, we don't care about it.
I understand. I was just.
Yeah, yeah. No, I understand. We, right.
And you, yeah.
Okay.
We're not going to require the business owners to put those into the lead system.
So we're going to refer this somewhere?
I'd like to make a referral to the safety committee if the group is comfortable with that.
Yep.
So moved and...
Second.
It's been moved and seconded to refer ordinance 40-2016 to the safety committee for further study, and they'll come back with a recommendation to city council as a whole. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carries. Would you like to try and schedule that?
I would. How about if we set that meeting up for prior to our August 15th meeting, council meeting, maybe at 6:45? I think that'll probably be more than enough time.
Yeah.
Does that sound all right with the group?
What time did we say?
6:45.
Okay, we'll have the clerk post that time and date as well in these council chambers.
Does that work for you, chief?
Does that work for you, chief? Okay. Leslie?
Yes.
All right. Let's turn to page two of our agenda. This is a new liquor permit. I'm not sure. It's a new owner at Charlie's Homemade Ice Cream and Edibles. They're asking for a liquor permit. Chief, I need you to help me with this one. They were, Charlie owned both of them, then he sold the pizza and spaghetti operation to somebody else. And then you say that there's a new, this one is for the ice cream store, I think, or is this for both of them?
Yeah, I mean, it's what it says for the homemade ice cream edibles there.
Yeah, the Italian place is owned by Steve.
Yeah.
Who has a different owner, has his own set of...
And he already has some liquor over there.
He does, he does. I'm heartened by this as a longtime customer of Charlie's Ice Cream.
So we're going to spike the ice cream, is that what you're saying?
I said it.
Vermouth ice cream, is that what we're talking about?
Go in there with your grandkids, it'd be nice to have a little nip. Is it, what kind of a license is this, chief?
It's a D1.
Which is what?
The top of the one.
Everything.
If it's a open,
Because I'm so interested in liquor, I have to list off. D1, beer only for on-premises consumption, original sealed containers for carryout only until 1 a.m.
Totally appropriate.
Float, right, yeah.
Beer float.
I don't know how many people are going to do it.
Beer float.
Give me a Michelob float.
So just out of curiosity, since they've got a couple of tables set up outside, would that be permissible for the person to carry the beer outside with Johnny and Susie?
I think there's another permit they have to obtain to go ahead and...
Allow them to have it open outside?
Outside, yes.
Okay.
This is one that your option is to request a local hearing or not to request a local hearing. It is a new permit. Beer permits are not as regulated as hard liquor.
So I move that no hearing be required for a new D1 liquor permit from K&B Ventures Corporation, doing business as Charlie's Homemade Ice Cream and Edibles, 6600 Sylvania Avenue.
Yeah, there are no residents nearby here, so I think that's a no harm, no foul thing. So I'll second that.
It's been moved and seconded not to request a local hearing for this D1 liquor permit. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, motion carries.
We have a lot of happy ice cream.
I think it's probably for carryout too, right? That's an important deal.
Seems like what this does is give the parent or the coach that goes there with a large team a chance to have a cold beer while the kids enjoy their ice cream.
Maybe not the coach, but...
We would hope not, but it does give that opportunity.
Yeah.
I don't know how a coach is any worse than a parent doing the same thing.
Having coach softball.
You need it,
right? All right. Let's move on to agenda item 13. You have in your council packets a list of items that the safety director is Safety Service Director is recommending we list on Gov Deals. Kevin, you want to go over this list, or Chief?
These are actually service department.
They are service, okay.
Equipment. The pickup is one that last year when the police department got a new vehicle, we repurposed one of their vehicles into the zoning department. And this pickup is the one that used to be used in the zoning department. It's a 1999. It has frame damage and is time to move on. We have a pallet of landscape pavers from a previous project that have been sitting around for years really of no purpose or use. I'd like to get rid of those. We have several two-way radios that we had to get. If you recall, we had to upgrade our radio system into the multi-band system that's required now. And so these are old radios to get rid of. The repeaters are both old equipment. We've replaced and updated from these, and they're just sitting around. And then the crack fill machine we replaced this year. And this is the old machine that we would be getting rid of. And I would ask for permission to dispose of them. We will post all of them on Gov Deals. And if we're able to sell them there, we'll do so. If not, then we'll take them to a local scrap shop or something of that nature where we can dispose of them.
Kevin, I have a question about the electronics, the radios. Do those require a licensed band to operate those?
Yes.
And is that licensed band still something that the FCC permits, or is it an obsolete band?
It's in all likelihood probably an obsolete band. I think anybody that would purchase these, it'll be scrap value if there is any to them. I don't look for anybody to reuse them because it's older equipment.
So what are the chances that somebody uses the radios overseas because you can't use them here? I mean, I would hate to see these radios leave here because we don't use them, and then the only place that can use them is Somalia, and now we've got radios that you know, we could have maybe just destroyed instead of letting them go somewhere else.
There's nothing saying that we have to list those. If council would so desire, we can just dispose of them. I'm not sure that I can landfill them. I'd have to research what proper disposal.
Yeah, I mean, if they were usable and if there was a market for something that was usable, then I would think it was okay. But if it's not usable, then I don't know why somebody would buy a radio that's not usable.
Yeah, I think just for scrap value, it would be. Okay.
This is not a situation where an existing user that still has access to those bands could buy them for replacement parts? Or
no,
is this band, then these bands have been
Removed.
Yeah, yeah. They have,
so to speak.
Not, yeah. It, they were, they do not fit, they do not meet current FCC requirements with the multi-band. We couldn't, they just weren't able to be split. So
it would be my preference if we just found a way to dispose of those, everything else. But I would need.
Let's go ahead and authorize the other three items on the list, and let's do more research on this. Okay. See what our options are, but I take your point very well. No sense letting them go to, since you can't use them legally, somebody would have to use them illegally or take them overseas and use them in a way that we wouldn't want them used.
Right.
So let's take a look at that. Maybe we'll talk to Motorola about it, see what they have to say, and we'll come back to you with those if we can. You got more input at this time, Chief?
I'm sorry.
Do you have any additional input at this time, Chief?
No.
Okay.
We're just discussing how we would dispose of them. We won't be able to landfill. I'll have to do some research on that, but we'll take care of that.
So we're going to remove the wideband radios and the repeaters?
Down through repeaters.
Repeaters. So the three items left would be the Ford Ranger, the landscape pavers, and the crack fill machine.
Got it. Okay.
Is there a motion to authorize these to be listed on Gov Deals?
Second.
Moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Moving on to agenda item 14, a couple of committee reports to be made at this time. First, Mr. Lukey, the Employee and Community Relations Committee held on July 5th.
Correct, Mr. Mayor. Thank you. I believe members of City Council are aware that Mr. Sanford and the committee has been looking into the production of a 2017 city calendar patterned after some that we've seen from Worthington and other communities. We believe that this is an effort that we want to proceed with, particularly if the content from the calendar also be used online, and we have a more robust online calendar as well. Mr. Sanford talked about specific concepts for the calendar and about the fact that he believes the city can seek sponsors for defraying part of the cost of the calendar. This would also be paid for in part by decommissioning the Country Journal and using the calendar as one of the two Country Journal information pieces each year with the trash pickup schedule and so on. Production schedule that Bill suggested would be a mailing on December 2nd, which would get the calendar in the hands of citizens before the end of the year. In order to proceed with that, we'd have to have copies submitted by October 1st. So the committee agreed to proceed with a 2017 calendar, and Sandy moved and Katie seconded a motion to direct the administration to prepare a calendar layout and budget that could then come back to the committee for review before sending to council for final approval. So that is our report.
Thank you. And it's been a little more than a week, Bill. I assume that you are proceeding with that report back.
Yes, and I could have the report even given a mock-up, what it could look like by our next council meeting. And I have been in contact with potential sponsors also. You know about those by that meeting also.
Okay, thank you. 14B is a report of the Streets Committee meeting held this evening at 6:30 p.m. Mr. Fry.
Keep it very short, Mayor, since everybody was here earlier this evening. We had two subjects we went through. Mr. Aller presented a PCR value map of the city roads and streets and a projected five-year time horizon of what those numbers are going to, what those numbers would look like, the PCR values would look like in 2021 with projected expenses. And investments that we would make in the streets and other things for the next 5 years, 17 through 2021. We also talked about the possibility of utilizing OPWC money for some of those projects, that OPWC money may be increasing. And Mr. Hannon brought up the possibility of bonding some of the larger expenses on the projects rather than paying them off in a single year. The other thing that was discussed was situation with the railroad crossing on Convent Boulevard from one of our citizens. We really don't have the ability to do anything other than encourage the railroad to make the modifications necessary to keep it in good condition. And that two other things that come out of it, I would be contacting the citizen back to let her know what was discussed, and that we were going to put on the website the links to the railroad contact people for the citizens to contact those individuals directly. This is adjourned 7:15. That's my report.
Thank you. Agenda item 15 is committee referrals. We did add 15A, but that utilities committee was previously scheduled at an earlier part of the meeting. Any further committee referrals to be made at this time? Mrs. Husband.
Just a reminder that this building and grounds committee meeting that's at the bottom of the page is at the dining room in the museum, so it's not here. So
the dining room
in the historical museum.
Okay.
Second room in from the front door.
Yeah.
Okay, if there's nothing further on that, we'll go to the added agenda items. First thing is item 16. Mrs. Barbara Conover has been serving as our appointment to the Toledo Lucas County Board of Health for the past few years. And Sylvania has had a track record of appointing very good and successfully contributing members to that board. That's been the case for several decades. Mrs. Conover is getting high marks for her role on that board as well. I talked to the, or I've had communications from, come from leadership that they would like to continue her on it to provide the continuity now that they're under new leadership at the Board of Health. And she has expressed interest in continuing to serve as the city's representative. So I am pleased to announce that I've reappointed her, and I need you to confirm this reappointment.
So moved.
Second.
Moved and seconded to confirm the mayor's reappointment of Mrs. Barbara Conover. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries. Thank you. Added agenda item 17. ODOT has indeed taken their summer salt replenishment bid. Mr. Aller, would you like to make a report?
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Yes,
we are buying.
Excuse me?
We are buyers.
Yeah, we are buyers. ODOT has taken bids, and council previously authorized the purchase of 1,000 tons of salt for this year, and the bid price for this year is $39.71 per ton. If you remember, the last year's bid was approximately $65 and change, so it just shows the fluctuation and how much a mild winter can impact that cost. So we contracted for 1,000 tons. We are able to purchase up to 10% more at $39 and change. I will, in all likelihood, exercise that option. So we'll be spending approximately $40,000 for salt under this contract. So,
do we need that much salt? It seemed like we had a very mild winter last year. Is that really replenishing the supply, or?
We will be, the plan is to replenish what we use this year. We are pretty full right now. The new salt storage facility, we do have some room in the facility right at our maintenance garage for probably maybe about 400, 500 ton. But our plan is to wait. You can take delivery of this salt anytime between November 1st and March 31st of next year.
So if we have another mild winter, we can actually stock up for
correct.
Next year.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay.
All right. Thank you. And finally, added agenda item 18, Mr. Hanum, a discussion about the Ohio checkbook program offered by the state treasurer.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. I had an opportunity to, I don't know if it was an opportunity, but I met with Josh Mandel last week, and some of his Northwest Ohio folks, and was surprised to learn that about 25% of Ohio's local government units are now participating in the Ohio online checkbook at OhioCheckbook.com, and I was particularly surprised to learn that Lucas County, the city of Toledo, were participating along with Ottawa Hills and public schools in Toledo, Oregon, and Ottawa Hills, and that the Metro Parks are also participating. I know we talked about participating last year and decided we didn't want to be the front line of that, but it now appears that this is catching on, and I think it's worth re-looking at.
The program is maturing, and now there's a track record we can take a look about.
I didn't want to be a pioneer.
I agree with that. And what we were concerned about was how much additional time will have to be invested by our staff in order to participate to reproduce data that's already available online now through our audits. And it is appropriate to take another look at it. I don't object to taking a look at it, but we will try to evaluate what the time impact would be. Toby, you got anything more to say about that?
Now,
we have nothing to hide, that's not the point.
Right, the point is that this is, it's not that we're hiding anything. I don't want to be the last community in Northwest Ohio that signs up for it.
And you look like you are hiding.
Right, and I forwarded the Toby contact information of the individuals in the treasurer's office who are working on this, including the individual from Northwest Ohio, and they're very interested in answering our questions and getting that information to us on a timely basis. And I don't know how I feel. I don't know what the cost would be or what the issues are. And I would like to have those defined so that we're making an intelligent decision. And I'd like to do that in before the end of the year, so that we have plenty of time if we decide to go forward in 2017 to go forward in 2017. So I'll leave it to you how much time you want to investigate this before we refer it to a finance committee for hearing. But okay. What do you, a month, early September sometime?
It won't take a month. It's not that much to research. A lot of it, I mean, the mayor talked about the financial statements and that this information goes well beyond that. This will show
right.
Where the maintenance department bought a screwdriver. I mean, it's just, it's information. It's obviously it's a public records request. They can get it. In my opinion, the audited financial statements is more than sufficient to put out there. And I can certainly research it. But it's not, we can set a finance committee meeting. It's not going to take a lot of research to find out what it's going to take to get signed up.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then,
I'm interested in how much time it's going to take to participate. Mm-hmm. That's what's of interest to me.
Me too.
We have cut back our staff in the finance department's half of what it used to be. We need to take a look at that.
Okay. Well, I would like to refer this matter to the finance committee. And
I think you suggested a September date.
Sometime in September. I'm just looking at our calendar now.
So wait, Mr. Hanum, you would like to set a finance committee meeting now. You're just looking for a report from Mr. Schroyer.
No, I would like to. I have some thoughts on this that I would like to talk about with our finance committee.
Okay.
Could we? So do it? If we could do it around our first finance committee meeting and or our first meeting.
Yeah, September 6th.
Which is what, the 6th?
What are you thinking, Mark?
How long is it going to take? Half hour.
So 6:45 on September
6th. Sure.
Is that all right?
Yeah. Okay, we'll have the clerk host that meeting as well. The finance committee on Tuesday, September the 6th at 6:45 in these council chambers. That brings us to the end of our agenda. There are a couple items of interest on the information list. First, there's two annexations here that have been approved by the county commissioners, and they have the 30-day waiting period. Chris, where are these?
The Board of Commissioners was a little late in getting those to us. Those hearings were actually at the end of April, so I think I already reported that those were granted successfully. So we will be able to accept those at the August 15th council meeting, and that's for the 20 acres on King Road and then one other parcel back in the Northwoods subdivision.
Okay. C is noise mitigation petition that's been offered. I've heard from some of our residents who would like to do this. However, the ones I've heard from are north of Monroe Street, not south of Monroe Street. But this program is only being offered to us south of Monroe Street, and there definitely are residential areas. You got the Sylvan Square area on the west side. We've got the Box Lane area on the east side. the expressway is elevated in both of those, in those areas, both directions. So the noise from the expressway does travel very freely through those neighborhoods. So this could be a positive development. How are you intending to engage residents for this, Mr. Aller? Because they need to express interest and sign a petition as well. We can't just report it here and be done with it.
Mr. Shaw worked with Debbie in our office, and his letters were sent to all of the potential affected parties, and we have three different petitions in our office that, depending on where those people are at, if they're interested, they'll be coming into our office and signing the petition that they're involved in.
Okay. Very good. Is there a financial burden on this to the city if they proceed to do it? I mean, these are being built, anytime they improve a highway or expressway now, they build these in interstate. They seem to automatically build these in urban areas.
Can I ask, who pays for that?
You do.
Well, but I mean, through the state or through the feds?
I don't know. It's the same thing.
Yeah, that I don't know. ODOT administers it.
Yeah, it comes from, it's probably federal money, but it's coming through the state.
Yeah, it's through their environmental program.
Yeah, it's the state.
There's no question about it. It's our tax dollars at work. And we're getting them every place, particularly the one that the newest one is I-475 there from Corey Road,
yeah,
all the way down to Secor. Those are new. Some of them are awfully close to the road. I don't know why they're so close, but, and they're building a whole bunch of them as they improve 475 heading south as well, in the central and south of it. Okay. E is the report from the Division of Taxation. You can see the number on there. We're now at 15.39% through the first half of the year. That's a very good development. It continues to settle back a little bit, and is not all the new ProMedica Health and Wellness Center. In fact, it isn't, for sure. This is higher taxes being paid from a broader base of our employers around town, and we'll keep you posted on a monthly basis how this is going. Positive development. Hope it continues. All right. That brings us to the end of our agenda. Is there a motion to adjourn?
So moved.
Second.
It's been moved and second to adjourn. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carries, and this council stands adjourned until its next regularly scheduled meeting on Monday, August the 15th at 7:30 p.m.